Well, next week we are jammed with some paranormal shows for you, including Planet X. You're going to love it. Tonight I wanted to do something different. I wanted to get into the electronic election fraud because that affects so many people. And this topic that's coming up, we're going to be talking about lessons for living. It's about you and how to change your life or how to make things, well, different for you. So stick around. Carl Pillemer with us. One of his works, 30 Lessons for Loving. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Carl Pillemer, founder, director of what is the Cornell Institute for Translational Research on Aging, a center that works to increase public awareness of aging research. Dr. Pillemer has spoken widely throughout the world on issues of successful aging relationships. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Hello, Carl. Thanks for staying up with us.
Well, it's such a pleasure. You know, this is the second time I've been on. I enjoyed it so much the first time. So
that was almost 3 years ago to the day. Pretty close.
It was right around now that I was up in the middle of the night out here on the East Coast.
So can we slow down the aging process?
The answer to that is yes and no. It really looks like there's nobody around who can go beyond about 120 years, so the pretty much the limit is fixed, unless science comes up with something really remarkable. But what's interesting is what slows down the aging process the most is something that people don't even think about. It's a little bit of what your grandmother would have told you, especially exercise and also diet. The problem is a lot of the anti-aging drugs, taking hormones, all these kind of things, there's almost no scientific evidence. If you could take a thing like exercise and bottle it and sell it like a drug, whoever did that would actually, you know, make huge amounts of money. So unfortunately, a lot of the news, you know, is what your grandmother or great-grandmother would have said about aging is what seems to work. But I will say science is on its, you know, who can say? Because,
sure,
you know, there's so much of an advance.
I want to add to that, working and keep working as long as you can. I have found, Carl, that so many people who either retire early or stop working, that's when they fade away. That's when they die early.
You know, I cannot agree with you more. In fact, I'm one of the strongest things I believe is people retire way too early. They retire too early with no plans. You know what but actually some research is suggesting, George? It's much better to take some time off a year or two here and there when you're young. Do those things that you always wanted to do, and then work more into your 70s and beyond. People get lonely, people get isolated, people get depressed. It's staying engaged, and I agree with you. Folks just get out of the workforce faster than they ought to, and they should really think twice about it.
You know, my father retired. He's not with us anymore. He passed away. He was 88 years old. I actually thought the guy could have gone on forever, Carl, but he retired early, retired at 60. And he really wasn't that active. Dad was never the kind of guy to exercise. He wasn't a health nut when it came to eating. And when he retired, his love, of course, was always his family. I mean, that was his hobby. That's what he liked to do. He just liked to get involved in the family's affairs and who was doing what and what grandchild was doing what. But he didn't really work or have anything else other than the family interest. And I've got to tell you, I did see him slow down as the years went by. Retired at the age of 60, which is really young, and then really did nothing after that. So he lived 28 years after he retired, which is a long run, but he really started fading, I think, you know, toward his late 70s, and then he went. I was convinced after watching him that he retired too early, and you got to go as long as you can.
George, and was your father still alive when you and I spoke the last time?
He died in 2011, so he died about 4 months before you came on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we know now, and I completely agree with you. But really for successful aging, just based on what you were saying, I think here there's one problem and one solution. A big problem is that young people have no idea, and by young I mean 60 and under, let's say, aren't thinking about how long they're going to live. Human life has now changed. The most radical thing that's almost happened in the history of populations is the fact that people can live now till 80, 90, or 100. Someone who's 60 has to think about not 5 years, not 10 years, but 25 or 30 or 40 years. You actually may have as much time after retirement as you spend in the workforce.
Yeah.
People have to ask themselves, how am I going to use that longevity bonus? And you're right, it's three key things. It's staying socially engaged, it is staying mentally active, and staying physically active. And, you know, we live in a society that doesn't encourage those things, so people struggle against it.
I work out 4 days a week. I do what is called the Royal Canadian Air Force Exercise Program. It's really simple. Everybody, you can Google it and you can see it. It's an intensive program for one's age. It gives you different levels based on how old you are, and I try to push myself beyond my age limit. And, you know, it doesn't require a lot of equipment, though I have in my house treadmills and, you know, Bowflexes and things like that. But I do it, Carl, 4 days a week. And I got to tell you, when I wake up in the morning and start into it, I hate it. I mean, it's not one of those things you look forward to do it, but I push myself to do it. And when things disrupt it, like a meeting or I have to go somewhere, I try to get up a little earlier to do it, because for me, I'm not missing those 4 days, whether I'm on a trip somewhere. And again, because you don't need a heavy equipment or barbells and things like that, you can do it in your hotel room. You can do it anywhere. But it's become a regimen for me, and I've been doing it for 14 years now, and I've never missed one of those four workout days.
You know, I remember that from actually my sort of high school and college era. And the thing that's so great about that, and that your listeners should pay attention to, that's a great example of with exercise. People don't need to be a marathoner. People don't need to spend 10 hours a week. What research shows us now is short bursts of very intense exercise really help you. So seriously, if you can do a 4 minute or a 7 minute or 10 minute spurt of jumping jacks and jogging in place and that kind of thing, it has incredible benefits. So really, that particular program you're talking about is a great one. And you're right, it becomes a habit. It's almost like an addiction. If you don't do it, you feel tense, you feel nervous. And so it's a very good positive addiction, and people don't need to, you know, go crazy about it. It's basically, in terms of exercise, from what we know about aging and health, anything's better than nothing. And those short bursts, like, I think that's what that program is, right? It's short.
Yep, it sure. It's a 10-minute intensive aerobics and calisthenics, but it's 10 minutes and it's very intense. Plus you've got some running in place exercises. And if they'd like you to run a mile a day. Well, I don't have that kind of time, so I do it on a treadmill, and it's easier for me.
Right, and you can think about other things, watch TV if you're on a treadmill. Yeah, people have taken the exercise thing to become so complicated that they forget how easy it can be to do exactly the kind of thing you're doing. I mean, that's what people need to do to have successful aging.
What you should avoid is sending text messages while you're on the treadmill, because I did that once and I went flying.
Even worse is sending those text messages while you're jogging outside. I mean,
or you run into a pole that way or something like that.
Exactly. But in general, it's so good for you. You know, the other issue that you raised a bit earlier about your father is it's amazing how strong the health benefits of staying connected are, and especially for us men. You know, our wives or women in general tend to have stronger social relationships. They have more friends. They're going out and doing things. Men, as they get older, often just have their wives and their families. And what research shows, and this is not just, you know, a platitude, that people who are more socially connected live longer. So even if you're an introvert, even if you're somebody who doesn't, you know, naturally take to people, as you get older, discovering some way to connect with people, if it's through hunting, it's through fishing, it's through church, it really is a lifesaver that people who know more people and have stronger social networks live on average years longer, because it keeps you mentally, physically, and socially active. And a big problem, especially with men, is folks get more and more isolated. I think you mentioned your dad kind of focusing more on the family.
Yeah.
Somehow people have to get themselves out there in order to be healthy in later life.
No doubt. Now, what is your legacy project? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, George, I had been a gerontologist, somebody who studies old people, for maybe 25 years, and then I was hit by a revelation. Everything I was looking at was the problems of old people and older people as problems. I was studying elder abuse and Alzheimer's disease and nursing homes. It's like I was writing the book of Job for old people, basically. And it also hit me that our society does that too, treats old people as old, sick, and frail. Now, that is so different from the way people have looked at older people throughout human history. Until about 100 years ago, there was one thing old people, everybody knew what they were good for. I mean, that was advice for living through difficult situations. So I said to myself, could we go to the oldest Americans, people at the finish line looking back in their 80s, 90s, and 100s, and ask them their lessons for living, their advice, you know, for how to live a happier, healthy life? I'll just give one example.
Sure.
Everybody, and I'm sure lots of your listeners, are struggling through the second worst economic downturn in human history. Why wouldn't you want to talk to the people who went through the worst one? But we've been at war for a decade. Why not talk to soldiers about how they dealt with it, or their spouses about how they kept their families together? So that was the idea behind the Legacy Project, and now probably in one way or another, we've contacted around 2,500 of the oldest Americans and asked them the question, what advice do you have for younger people about living a good life in a difficult world? And it's amazing stuff. It's been a really fun project.
What are some of the things they've said about just that question?
Here's what they want everybody to think about. If there's one thing you can imagine, 2,000 old people pounding their fists on the table and saying, if there's one thing in this world I want young people to know, it's that life is short, or life is really short. Or as one guy told me, life goes by in a nanosecond. And the older you are, the more you say that. These 90 and 100-year-olds say, you know, this one person actually said, I don't know what happened because the next thing you know, you're 100. And they say that actually not to depress people, but it gets them to make better choices about their time, to think more about how they're using their time. So I'd say that's a big insight. You know, they say, stop worrying so much about things, lighten up more about life, because you only have a limited lifetime and you'd really better use it as effectively as you can. I would say that's the one insight that really changed my life and really starts you thinking about how you spend your time working, valuing experiences and people more than things. That's a lot of what old people know that we don't.
Well, the one thing, too, there is this factor where things are just going faster and faster and faster. I mean, I can't believe next weekend, we're going to be into February already. I mean, it just doesn't slow down. It really does. Is it because we're getting older? I mean, when I think back when I was 20, I don't recollect time going by as fast. But now that I'm where I am now, to think back when I was 20, it seemed like it was just yesterday. And it's just blown past me.
You know, it's also, if you think if you were about 8 and you got out of school for the summer, think how long that seemed. That seemed like an eternity.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know, that is a phenomenon. It really is, you know, the relativity of time. You really do have a sense of things going by much more quickly. You know, you also have, as you get older, I think it really is precisely that sense. And there are some kind of neurological things that actually really do happen. Aging doesn't give us the power to disrupt the space-time continuum, so to speak, but we really perceive it to be very different. I can tell you one reason why that is. One thing human beings do is we measure our lives by firsts. You know, our first kiss, our first boyfriend or girlfriend, our first leaving home, first marriage, first kid, those things are really concentrated in the early part of our lives. Right. And as you get beyond age 30, you don't have so many firsts. And I think that's one reason, because you're going from these big events, and now at our age, sure, you're doing things and accomplish things, but there's more of a blending in. So I think it is a little bit of kind of a different space-time continuum for folks as they get older.
Well, and you know what? This is going to sound weird, Carl, but what seems to go by fast for me and what gives me the perception of time and speed, paying bills. Now, that may sound weird, but I got to tell you, you make your house payment for January, and all of a sudden, your February payment is almost due. And you make that payment when it's due, and then March is ready to go. That is speeding up to me. Now, why do I think that?
You know, I think that in it's basically the amount of time passing relative to our age. So, you know, for a five-year-old, a year is 20% of their whole life, right? For a 50-year-old, a year is only 2% of their life. So it's kind of a ratio, you know, because you're constantly comparing time intervals with how much time you've got left or how much time you've already lived. So I think that's part of it. But, you know, for folks, especially older people, time is kind of the sea in which they swim, and they're really aware of it, and they really want the rest of us to be aware of it, like you're saying. I think the insight you're saying about time going quickly, you know, the message from that is, seriously, use your time well. You know, actually, one of the things I wonder, as kids today look back over their lives, are they really from 90 going to think, wow, all that time playing World of Warcraft was really worth it? You know, I think, and that's what old people want us to do, is to think like you're doing, but think about it earlier. Yeah, but I agree, this notion of how the clock speeds up is something that scientists don't quite understand, and it's so true. Yeah, right, it seems like tax time comes faster every year, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it really does. So, and here's another perception. I mean, to you, how old do I sound to you? Take a guess.
So I know a bit about you, but I was thinking about that. I would say, you know, late 40s.
I get that all the time. I even get that in perception. I'm 64. So I'm saying to myself, okay, so, you know, some people guess you to be in your 40s, and you're really 64. So you've got 20 more years on when you thought you were going to start slowing down. So I've added that to the 64. So I might be able to go until I'm about 115, I think.
You know, first of all, I always say for me that old age is 10 years older than I am, and I'm sticking with that. But, you know, I'd like your listeners to know that there's good research showing that people who feel that they're younger than they actually are live longer. So having the attitude, you know, I might be 64, but really in my mind I'm 48.
Yeah.
It's a very positive thing. And there have also been studies now showing that the more positive you are about aging, the more likely you are to live longer. So your precise attitude is something that people should try to emulate. Now, I've got the opposite problem. You've got a great and resonant radio voice. I have a high squeaky Mickey Mouse voice that makes me sometimes sound like I'm 80, even though I'm only 60.
Yeah, but you're more professional. Yeah, but you're more professional than me. You're more scholared than me.
That's true, but you're right, though. And I think this attitude thing, you've got to think of your real age. So somebody like you who's working out, who's healthy, has much more of a real age, let's say of 48, than somebody who's 48, who's not in shape, who has all kinds of chronic illness. So people can't just go by their chronological age. They really have to go by their physical and mental age, and it really frees you up to think about it that way. So I think you're on the right track.
My mother's 85. She acts like she's 50 years old. I mean, this woman has more energy than most people I've ever met, Carl. And I'm saying to myself, well, maybe I got that genetically from her. Carl, stay with us. We're going to continue talking about just things to make you happy. Next hour, when we open up the phone lines, I'm going to ask you a certain question in addition to your questions. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Dave Schrader will be filling in for me tomorrow. Why? Because I'm on my way to the 2015 Del Rio UFO Festival. A major event coming up. So just go to our calendar page. Also, the highlight reel right there on the homepage of coasttocoastam.com gives you full information on just what's going on there. I'm looking forward to this. So if you live in the greater Texas area or outside of that, come on over at the Del Rio UFO Festival. I'll be there this weekend. And welcome back to Coast, Carl Pillemer with us. Carl, the divorce rate, you know, we talk about this 50% rate, which some people are saying is a myth, and that the divorce rate isn't going up, it's actually going down. What do you hear?
So we've got some good news on that. And you know where I think the big problem here is, there's so much media coverage, present company excluded, of the of how hard marriage is, of how it's going down the drain, how marriage isn't going to exist anymore. And really, that's wrong. And it's wrong for a couple reasons. First of all, exactly like you said, the divorce rate is stabilizing. It's going down a bit. But it varies so much for separate groups. For example, with folks who wait until their late 20s to get married and who are a little bit better educated, their divorce rates may be, say, closer to 20%. And here's the thing I love about marriage right now. If you survey young people, and I'm curious what your listeners think, if you survey people in their 20s and 30s, they totally believe in marriage. Almost 100% that say they want to get married. Almost 100% of those say they want to get married to one person for life. And believe it or not, about 80 or 90% say they want to be faithful for life. So as depressed as we get about it, all the gloom and doom, it looks like marriage is here to stay. And that's important because no matter what you see in these movies and TV shows about awful marriages, marriage is basically very good for you. People who are married and stay married tend to be in better physical health, in better mental health. You know, they do better economically. So it's good news that marriage seems to be stabilizing. And you know, George, I've spent the last 4 or 5 years interviewing about 600 or 700 people who made it to the finish line of a 50, 60, or 70-year marriage. And I'm telling you, those people say it's like the best thing that's ever happened to them. It's, you know, it's a capstone of human existence. So I think people shouldn't be so pessimistic. You're absolutely right. You know, the chances of staying together are actually better than they used to be. And sure, there's a lot of stress, but people can definitely make it to a finish line of life if they really have the drive and desire.
Do you think that people generally are happier now than they were years ago?
You know, the problem is that we don't have good measures. I'll tell you one thing. Here's one thing we absolutely know, even though it sounds crazy. Older people are happier than younger people. So if you do a survey of people, people in their kind of late teens, early 20s are at the happiest level. Happiness goes down throughout the middle years and comes back up again at 70. So even though older people have chronic disease and loss, they're actually happier than younger people. And I think we got to figure out why. You know, I think in some ways people are happier because their objective circumstances are better. I mean, older people in the U.S. have never lived this well. No matter what you think about the government, one program that's worked is Social Security. It's pulled most older people out of poverty. So I'd say, yeah, I think people right now have the best chance of a happy old age than they've ever had in human history. And that's good news, right? I mean, that's something our society has really done that's progress.
That's great news. It really is. So as you look at the future in ways that, you know, people need to have a more quality-laden life, what do you recommend? What steps should they take?
Well, you know, the first thing we got to think about is, you know, what is science going to do for us? In some ways, our world is now almost like a science fiction world. I mean, like when I was reading science fiction books, you know, as a kid, a whole bunch of stuff has come true. So there's one, the one kind of black box in this is what can science do for aging? You know, because basically the reason why aging occurs is our cell DNA breaks down. And the repair just gets harder and harder. It may be that we're going to have unbelievable medical advances that do increase longevity. A lot of scientists are skeptical, and most of the products people can buy aren't any good. But so that's one black box, is will we in the next 10 to 20 years have some kind of drug intervention that we can do, you know, that's going to really change things? But, you know, I hate to tell your listeners, because I'm like everybody else, I want a magic bullet. And if you look at all the research, if I took it all together and distilled it, I'm going to quote myself from earlier on, so much of it is what your grandmother would have told you. I mean, people who do three or four things are likely to live longer. Look, but also half of it's genetics. So about half of it you simply can't control. You're in good shape because you have these long-lived parents. But essentially, it's keeping within a modest weight, exercising like you do 4 or 5 times a week, sleeping 6 to 7 hours, and staying socially integrated, not smoking. I wish it were sexier. I wish it were, you know, some kind of magic bullet you could prescribe. But basically, here's the bottom line. Most people who are young today are going to need their body for 100 years. You know, it's not like you're going to be 60 or 70 and you're going to drop dead. You're going to hang around till 70, 80, 90, or 100. And you got to ask yourself, do I want to be one of those people who's bent over and can't breathe and can't carry their own suitcases in an airport? Or do I want to take some steps now that's going to make a little difference? And the good news is it doesn't have to be that much. So I'd say that's, you know, kind of what's coming. The way people die now, it used to be people died from infections and flu and that kind of, people die now from lifestyle related diseases. And there's no drug that can cure the lifestyle. God, I wish there were, because I love to eat and drink. But, you know, there's no drug that can replace these lifestyle choices.
Just take a pill.
I wish we could, you know.
A magical pill.
So far, no good pills have been discovered, you know, that can beat back a life of sitting around and being inactive and smoking, you know. And it's tough, but that is really the way it is. But who knows? I mean, you talk about a lot of unusual things on your show, and a lot of those things which exist right now, like a self-driving car, would have seemed to us in 1960 is so bizarre. You know, it was a totally science fiction. Well, in terms of aging and health, you know, there could be astonishing breakthroughs. I'll tell you, George, there is only one thing. There's one proven thing that absolutely increases lifespan, and now we know it by a lot. The problem is nobody's going to want to do it. And that is something called extreme caloric restriction. They have found now, if you reduce your daily intake of calories from below what you need, so if your daily maintenance is 2,000 and you should only eat 1,600 calories,
you're going to lose weight.
And you can live longer, like with monkeys, animals, but who wants to live that way?
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
the thing.
So, you know, like you got to add years, you have to add life to years as well as years to life. So, yes, yeah, so I think those are some of the trends, you know, the importance of lifestyle. And also people should really keep their eyes on the news, because some major breakthrough may come through that changes the whole landscape of aging. And so it could be an exciting time.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to watch technology. You got to be abreast of what's going on. But it seems like a lot of people aren't trustful of modern medicine. You know, I like a mixture. I think modern medicine along with natural is very good. But a lot of people aren't trusting of doctors and scientists either.
People, right. And that's where they've got to be very discerning. So, you know, actually, our federal government that sponsors research has begun to acknowledge the importance of complementary and alternative medicine, and they are doing some research on it. And now we know some things, like acupuncture clearly works for certain things. People have to be selective. The one thing that I would urge your listeners, the reason why people start to not trust science and medicine, is the media take one study. You know, I'm just making this up, you know, eating garden soil is good for you, you know, or some crazy thing. They find one little study and they publicize it. Science doesn't work that way. So I think people would have a better sense of things if they weren't swayed by one study in the media. But yeah, I think that people do have to be careful about what their doctor tells them and be informed themselves. And a lot of complementary approaches are really more promising. There's just lots we don't know about the human body. And the way you put it is just right, a mix. You're not going to go to the acupuncturist if you break your leg.
That's
you're
right.
going to go to the doctor to get splinted. But if you have chronic back pain, you may as well try the acupuncturist. So I think it's absolutely that mix. I think you've hit it head on.
I mean, if you have high blood pressure and you do everything you can to get it reduced, that's great. But you know what? There are a lot of pharmaceuticals out there that can reduce your blood pressure that could save your life. And that's pretty good. On the other hand, I've never been a person to take pain pills, Carl. I don't like them. I think they can kill you. And so I got to hang up with that.
I I'm just like you. I have trouble taking an aspirin. I don't
I take a baby aspirin, a little 82 milligrammer every day. But I can handle that.
Which is really good. Well, you know what's great about, the one thing which your listeners should think about, though, every once in a while there's really good news, and there is really good news now on two of my favorite things. First of all, I'm sure your listeners have heard about the findings about alcohol, and especially for men, 1 to 2 drinks a day, so it's got to be moderate. So binge drinking is not going to help you. But there's no question that men who are moderate drinkers, a couple drinks a day and usually with meals, live longer, die less from all causes, and are much less likely to get heart disease and other conditions. That's one. Two, there's fantastic new findings on coffee, that for those of us who are coffee drinkers, 3 or so cups of coffee a day have tremendous health benefits, helps prevent diabetes, helps to prevent Parkinson's disease. There are new findings that it may prevent skin cancer. So two of my favorite things, are that they unfortunately haven't found that yet for donuts, which would be number 3.
Oh, that would be nice, but they won't.
But if you follow science, there's no question things like moderate alcohol consumption of any kind.
They say it's good for you.
Go for it unless you've got, obviously, if you've got a drinking problem, don't do it. And if you aren't drinking, you don't have to start. But folks who drink moderately can feel really pretty good about the effects on their health. So it's not all bad news. There's some good news out there, too, about longevity and health.
I think so, too. And, and if you don't have your health, and we've talked about this on this program before, you don't have anything because you let down the people that you care about, the people that you might want to be around to help. And if you can't take care of yourself health-wise, what good is it?
Well, George, and that is one thing I'd argue. One of my soapboxes from having written these two books, The 30 Lessons for Living, and now this new one, The 30 Lessons for Loving, about love and marriage, is one thing I'd like people to do is talk to their elders about these things. So don't just go to psychotherapists and counselors, but if you've got some issue about life, go and talk to older people about it. And what you're saying is one thing older people can really tell you. The ones who get to the end of later life with chronic disease, with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, with heart disease, all of them will say, what I did wasn't worth it. Smoking seemed fun. It's not worth it to have these 20 years with emphysema. So
yeah.
You're right. You're so right. If you don't have good health, it just poisons every other aspect of your life. But it's hard for people because we like short-term fun, don't we? It's hard to say that. So I think if you talk to old people about things like this, they can actually set you straight. And the problem is in our society, we don't have much contact with older people, and they aren't part of our lives. But I think you get that kind of sense about health if you talk to them.
But I am so convinced now, Carl, that living is to enjoy yourself, to take care of other people, to be kind, and, to make yourself, if you're really spiritual, you want to perfect yourself to get there, to get to that other side. But as far as the physical world's concerned, you're supposed to make it the best you can for the people you care about and for yourself. And
well, George, now can I ask you, did that change for you over time? Was that sort of different than it was in your 20s?
It got more extreme, I think, the older I got. I was always who I am, but it got better and better and better. I wish that I knew what I know now, and I'm not talking about buy an Apple stock or something. But I wish I knew what I know now about health and, you know, supplements and things when I was 25, because, you know, it would have been fantastic. But I never did that. You know, I was more interested in my career and everything else, and I just kept forging ahead. I never wanted to be overweight a lot, or, you know, particularly unhappy. You know, I'm a human being. I've had my relationships and my ups and downs, but I'm at the peak right now in terms of knowledge for myself, and I just wish I had it when I was 25 years old.
But, you know, I've heard so many people say that, and, you know, me at 60, I completely agree with what you're saying, and I think that's what younger people don't understand, and from our research is what we try to convey, that a lot of things get better at this stage of life. You feel like you understand things better. For example, from psychology, we know that when you get into your 60s, people regulate their emotions better, so that, you know, the highs are less high, the lows are less low, you have perspective. That's the kind of thing in these two books, in the 30 Lessons for Living and now 30 Lessons for Loving. The idea is to say, well, if young people understand what you just said, why couldn't they start to learn some of these things in their 30s rather than in their 60s? Like exactly what you said, enjoying life.
Yes.
Savoring small things, which you may find. I find things like, you know, the first cup of coffee in the morning or a warm bed on a cold night, you start to savor those things and feel grateful for them, right? I think that's something young people can do now. And that's what, as you get older, you know, naturally. But I don't think we have to wait till our age to begin to get this sense that, like you said, enjoyable experiences, maximize them, that people in your life really are going to be more important, you know, than making money, and you should focus on them. I think that is something that conversations like ours can help get young people to think about.
You know, here in the St. Louis area, the Ritz-Carlton on Sunday night will have a waltz night for folks, and people of all ages are there. And I used to laugh at them because, you know, waltzing, you know, the funny kind of dance. But not anymore. I mean, now it's just kind of cool because, you know, I'll meet my friends here on a Sunday or something when I'm in St. Louis. And, you know, as I walk through the area where they do that, it's kind of neat watching what they do, because let me tell you something, Carl, all of them are smiling. And you know what? That's worth it to me. And there aren't a lot of things that make people all unison and smile like that. And I think that alone cuts years off your life in terms of adding years to your life.
You know, if I could say one thing to people as one kind of magic bullet, you know, dancing would be a really good one, because we know exercise is the closest thing we have now to the fountain of youth, basically. I mean, one expert said, you know, that exercise is to the body what an oil lube and a filter are to your truck or your car. I mean, and this same person said, you know, you can operate without them, but things operate longer, you know, they operate better, like with a lube job or whatever. Well, that's what exercise does to your body. Dancing is perfect because it combines something social with exercise, and I think that is exactly what people need. You know, but there's one thought also that I'm curious of what you think about, having talked about your parents and you. Since people are living so long, the one thing folks have to acknowledge, there is a big difference from folks like us who are the leading edge of the baby boomers now getting older, and people in their 80s and beyond. It's not just one group of older people. There are many differences, especially between that oldest old cohort. I don't know if you've noticed where you are. In my community, they've renamed our senior center. It's called Lifelong now.
Mm-hmm.
Because people in our age range don't want to be caught dead at a senior center.
You're right. We're going to come back and take some phone calls, and I'll mention in a moment when we come back one thing specifically I'd like you to talk about, but we'll take your calls too.